Roger Ebert is probably America's most famous movie critic. Ebert became the first film critic to win the Pulitzer Prize for Criticism in 1975. He reviews films for TV and for print. He's also written several books, including The Great Movies and The Great Movies 2. He spoke to Steve Paulson about the movie genre known as film noir.
The collision of German Expressionism with Hollywood led to the phenomenon of an everyman who suddenly found darkness occupying his horizon. The typical film noir hero would be somebody like Fred McMurray in Double Indemnity, who was a perfectly ordinary insurance salesman until he met
the wrong woman.
The wrong woman. And I think, in a way, what happened was that, because, you know, the crime movies of the 30s, the Warner Brothers gangster movies, were not really film noir. They, in a sense, were rags to riches to rags, you know. The kid from the streets becomes Al Capone, and then he, you know, comes to a bad end. But suddenly you had ordinary people who could not conceive that murder or violence would enter their lives, and then it did. The Hitchcock formula, and Hitchcock has made some movies that I suppose technically are film noir, although he's not usually considered a film noir director, but he talked about the idea of the innocent man wrongly accused. Well, in film noir, what you have is an innocent man who becomes guilty.
So he's not a criminal by nature,
no,
but he somehow
he
falls
weak.
In with the wrong people.
He is weak.
By
he makes a mistake. He makes a mistake of judgment, and he digs himself in deeper and deeper. The fact that the great years of film noir were the 40s is interesting because during the 40s we had a world war. We had increasing amounts of information coming from Europe about the evil that man was capable of in connection with the Holocaust and many other examples. And we had the bomb. So that the Native American optimism, which had already been shaken by the Depression, was now given a real dark underside. And stories began to reflect that.
Well, you mentioned earlier Double Indemnity, that great
yeah.
movie
mm-hmm.
with Fred McMurray and Barbara mm-hmm. Stanwyck. And I recently read an essay that you wrote about that. And, I mean, it would seem that the motivation is kind of clear why they would both go in on this murder. I mean, Barbara Stanwyck wants to collect the money from the insurance money from mm-hmm. her husband if he dies. And Fred McMurray has fallen for her, so he wants the woman.
Yeah, so he'll go along with it.
So he'll go along with it. And yet that doesn't quite explain why they do what they do.
Well, perhaps the fascination of evil is part of it. They are both kind of hypnotized by awe at what a terrible thing they're doing. I don't believe for a moment that she's really attracted to him. She just wants the money, and she realizes she can manipulate him.
Would you tell me what's engraved on that anklet?
Tell us.
Tell us, I think I like that.
But you're not sure.
I'd have to drive it around the block a couple of times.
Mr. Neff, why don't you drop by tomorrow evening around 8:30? He'll be in then.
Who?
My husband. You were anxious to talk to him, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, but I'm sort of getting over the idea, if you know what I mean.
There's a speed limit in this state, Mr. Neff. 45 miles an hour.
How fast was I going, officer?
I'd say around 90.
Suppose you get down off your motorcycle and give me a ticket.
Suppose I let you off with a warning this time.
Suppose it doesn't take.
Suppose I have to whack you over the knuckles.
Suppose I bust out crying and put my head on your shoulder.
Suppose you try putting it on my husband's shoulder.
That tears it.
I believe that he's attracted to her. But I think he may also be attracted by the possibility that she opens up to him that he could do something like this. He is kind of tempted to be evil because he's just a little insignificant man. And there's a certain grandiosity involved in killing somebody, you know, getting possession of his wife and making a lot of money that make you seem like a big shot. Frequently in film noir, that's part of it too, the attraction of an impotent person who, through being bad, can become more important.
And obviously that's very appealing to lots of moviegoers because those movies really strike a chord.
Well, they do. And there are also movies, you know, there's a very curious little movie called Detour by Edgar Ulmer. It's almost incompetent in its manufacture. It was made for nothing and not made very well, except that it's totally effective. and it's about a schmo who falls under the influence of a very, very savage woman, played by the actress Ann Savage, who can basically get him to do whatever she tells him to do. And he's a masochist, and this attracts him, or at least he's unable to resist it. And he's fascinated in a way by the spectacle of his own self-destruction.
I keep trying to forget what happened and wonder what my life might have been if that car of Haskell's hadn't stopped. But one thing I don't have to wonder about, I know. Someday a car will stop to pick me up that I never thumbed. Yes. Fate, or some mysterious force, can put the finger on you or me for no good reason at all.
So he just spirals further and further down.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it maybe reflects a kind of feeling in the audience that the audience was losing control, that there was an evil in the world having to do with Nazism and the threat of nuclear destruction that was going to destroy us, and that our own goodness and our own steadfastness was no longer going to prevail.
You know, what's interesting is, I mean, when I think about a movie like Casablanca, it has the beginnings almost of a film noir. I mean, the cynical Humphrey Bogart, who's kind of given up on the world because he's been burned by love. But yet, of course, it turns out that
it's a film noir projected backwards.
Huh.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah, and then
at the beginning of the film, he has sold out. He has gone to Casablanca. He doesn't care about the issues. He only wants to protect himself and his own privileged existence. He's got everything all taken care of through bribery, and he sells booze and gambling, and then his idealism is reawakened. So, yeah, it's not a film noir.
Right.
On the other hand, there are a lot of films that are called films noir that basically are just black and white crime movies. Look at The Lost Weekend, for example, also by Wilder. Is that a film noir or not? Ray Milland is an alcoholic. It may simply be a social drama about an alcoholic who can't stop drinking. On the other hand, Days of Wine and Roses may be more of a film noir because the people start out as okay, and they spiral down into sadness.
So film noir, you're saying, is, I mean, we're not given any hope in the end. I mean, that's partly the definition.
No, we aren't. But we're given people who are taught a lesson, and the lesson is they're weaker than they thought they were, and they're capable of evil that they didn't think they could commit. That would be a film noir for you. The reason Lost Weekend is not necessarily a film noir is that he is an alcoholic, and therefore he has a disease, and the disease largely accounts for everything that happens to him in the film.
So the film noir would be someone who just sort of through his own devices sort of turns.
Own devices, his own weakness, or circumstances that reveal to him his fallibility. The hero of a film noir finds out, is educated in the facts that he is fallible and capable of evil and vulnerable. And to some degree, he participates in his own destruction voluntarily.
And it seems to me film noir is, I mean, there's something very existential about it. I mean, it was kind of what you're saying is, you know, once you label some condition or some disease, then it starts to remove it out of that category. Mm-hmm. We're talking about some basic angst about the world.
Yeah, and about characters who have a choice. You know, the choice is to live or die, symbolically. And an extension of that is the choice to kill someone or not to kill them. The choice to destroy your life or not to destroy it. The choice to embrace a negative or evil side of yourself or to resist it. The choice to be seduced or to not be seduced. Many people who think that they are righteous and virtuous have simply never been unlucky enough to meet the temptation that they cannot resist. And sometimes in society, the entire society will put you in a position where to be evil is the easiest thing to do. I mean, there were people in Nazi Germany who were indeed evil and other people who were just powerless to resist and went along. And what they did was simply acquiesce and cooperate and participate in a system that under other circumstances in another country at another time, they would not have been able to imagine themselves doing. Someone like Hitler, I think, was easily able to imagine himself as an evil man. I think he was able to accept that idea of himself. I don't know if he called it evil, you know, in that word, but certainly his behavior came as no surprise to him. But he led a lot of people into emulating that behavior who would not otherwise have thought about it or engaged in it. But they were not strong enough to resist it. And so that's the film noir thing, when you have it demonstrated to you that you're weaker than you thought you were. Mm-hmm. You know, it's extremely easy to be a holy person when you're a monk living in a cell somewhere. But it might be very hard to be a good person if you're drafted into the Nazi army.
Yeah.
Or into any system that you don't agree with but do not have the means or the strength to resist.
Roger Ebert is a film critic and the author of such books as The Great Movies and The Great Movies 2. He spoke with Steve Paulson.